If you're hearing this, it means tickets are now on sale for our streaming Cybactacular.
That's what we're calling the streaming show of our Star Trek V review that we toured last year. We filmed our Hollywood show, and it's going to be streaming on Thursday, May 16th at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. And the stream will be available for a couple of weeks after that. If you can't watch right at the premiere time. A couple of pieces of information about this. If you support us at MaximumFun.org/join and your membership is current, check your email inbox because Maximum Fun will have emailed you a promo code to get $5 off your ticket. And also, we have some VIP packages available that include a meet and greet with me and Adam. Those are going fast, so jump on that if you want a meet and greet VIP package. Again, it's greatestgentour.com to get your tickets for the streaming Cybactacular.
Here's to the finest crew in Starfleet. Engage.
Watch your back, Sean Luke.
I'm Captain Janeway of the USS Voyager.
Welcome to The Greatest Generation. It's a Star Trek podcast by a couple of guys who are a little bit embarrassed to have a Star Trek podcast. I'm Ben Harrison.
I'm Adam Pranica. Really dragging ass today.
You were drinking the same stuff I was drinking last night, and it really smacked you, huh?
I think it might have been maybe overindulging in some food, specifically. Food maybe even more than drink.
Yeah. We went out for KBBQ with a bud last night.
Yeah.
I was definitely like up in the middle of the night needing water desperately.
I've found that as I age, I'm much more sensitive to salt, like salty food, as a thing that makes me feel bad.
Yeah. Samesies.
And yeah, we really took a tour of the KBBQ menu and...
We did.
It did not seem like I could hydrate fast enough before bed.
No. They kept the water coming at that restaurant, but still, it crushes me when I'm up in the middle of the night to pee and then also a different time to drink tons and tons of water.
Yeah.
It really bothers me that the human body works like that.
You really get a sense for the use case for the hotel room IV treatment. You know?
Sure, yeah. I don't know why we haven't availed ourselves of that in the past.
I know. I should just be hanging bag at home, right by the bed. Wouldn't that make it easier?
That's what we need. We need to get, like, nurse certifications for ourselves and hang a little bit of bag.
For so many things, Broad is tantamount to hanging bag.
Yeah.
But not even Broad could see me through this particular amount of sodium. It was a lot.
It was a lot.
Yeah.
I got quite a bit of enjoyment last night about an anecdote that you related.
Mm-hmm.
This is kind of a segment that we've been... I think we tried this out on Greatest Trek, maybe. But I feel like it could work on Greatest Gen.
Oh, how do you mean?
The rare, the very unusual... Good bit moment.
All I do is
bits.
No matter what,
you're always doing
bits.
No matter what,
you're always doing
bits.
An amazing bit.
Good bit moment. Big laughs all around. I think this could be only the second time in our show's history this has ever happened. But yeah, I told the story at the dinner table last night with you of this great bit moment I had, and it killed at the table, just like it killed in the moment. The good bit goes like this. It was Father's Day, and I was taking the drive to see my parents, and I stopped at a dispensary on the way, not for myself, though it really comes in handy sometimes. I was shopping for my dad being a weed dad. And I go in there, and you know how you're always greeted by a bud tender who wants to help you.
Yeah.
I always like these interactions.
Yeah, it's a very funny, like, because like the average marijuana dispensary in Southern California that is recreational oriented at this point is either like still super head shoppy or is trying to look like an Apple store. But even when it looks like an Apple store, the guy that works there or the lady that works there is super duper head shoppy.
I think that description was spot on here. This was an Apple store looking store with a friend of mine from college who used to wear stuffed animals pinned to his JNCO jeans. Like that type of silhouette is happening
yeah.
here.
Okay.
Great person. Totally empty store. I got the sense that Father's Day wasn't a big marijuana shopping holiday.
That's shocking.
So with this in mind, I roll in and I'm greeted by my bud tender and he asks what I'm looking for and how strong would I like it? And I said, I would like something for my dad, who is kind of an enthusiast for these things. So I'll need something that is too strong for a touring funk band.
All I do is
bits.
No matter what.
And this guy explodes with laughter. And also the four other bud tenders who were just standing there waiting for the next customer. It totally killed. It was great.
You know, like, I've been guilty of being the guy in the restaurant who has an empty plate and the server comes around and said, I hated it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Or the, can you pack the rest of this up so I can take it home in a doggy bag? Like,
right.
I am embarrassed to say I have whipped that bit out on innocent servers that didn't need that mess.
I hate hearing that, Ben.
Yeah.
They don't deserve that.
It sucks.
It's hard enough.
I feel terrible about it. But the premise of those is that this is a fun joke that we can share between, mm-hmm. The problem with it is that it is so, you know, threadbare as a joke that everybody is sick and tired of it. And I think that the thing that's really delightful about your good bit moment is that that feels like it is like the first time anybody ever said, hey, can you put the rest of this in a doggy bag so I can take it home at a restaurant? You know?
Yeah. Yeah, it felt momentous.
That bit has like a good 6 months. Uh-huh. I hope the Friends of DeSoto will help themselves to it, go out into the world, buy a marijuana, say this thing.
Just as your question for a pediatrician has taken hold in the FOD community. And and those parents of young babies have done that bit at their doctors.
I'm just saying, like after 6 months, it's over. You know, we can never return to the good bit.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. We should be able to think up new bits by then. One in the plus column for you, one in the plus column for me, probably all that we will ever have.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But it feels good once in a while to have a good bit moment.
It really does. I'm so glad you shared that with the Friends of DeSoto.
Yeah, it felt good. Felt good, man.
You know what else feels good is talking about some Star Trek, my friend. You want to get into season 6, episode 12 of Star Trek Voyager?
I sure do, Ben. It's called Blink of an Eye.
Revert course.
Unless you've got something a little bigger in your torpedo tubes, I'm not turning around.
We are pulling up on a swollen bagel in space.
Oh, it really is, isn't it?
I got bored one day. And I put everything on a bagel.
Is the shape of this planet toroidal? Like, are there like holes in the pools?
It seemed like that kind of seat you see at a Design Within Reach that's like always on sale because no one ever buys one. But even at like $2,000, just seems like too much seat. Like, no one has that seat.
Yeah. No one has the polar region for a seat like that.
No. Yeah, this thing is half quasar, half dwarf star, and all banger.
Yeah. It's turning at 58 RPMs. Pretty nice.
Yeah.
And Voyager is very curious about it, so they pull up to it to get a load. And yeah, the effects of this planet knock their warp drive out almost immediately. Classic blunder.
Yeah, classic getting too close, isn't it?
They seem to do a lot of that on this show.
Yeah.
Like, we're curious about this thing. Oops.
Once they get pulled in, we cut to the surface of this planet where we see a yurt-based civilization. And yeah. Oh no, those pan flutes. I'm hearing.
Mm-mm.
Oh, no. And this villager's like doing some sort of farmer's market shopping. And he gets distracted by this light in the sky. And those bangers are going to bruise his fruit.
Oh, man. Yeah, it's a good thing the grass is so supple on this planet. The composite, like looking down the hill at the village, very weird. Very weird layering of like matte paintings and like green screen footage of people in costumes walking around.
It's rarely looked more distracting than this, right?
Yeah. And like, I feel like it gets better throughout the episode because they return to this composition over mm-hmm. time to, you know, illustrate the advancement of this society. But this yeah. first one, woof.
Yeah. After the theme, these villagers are thinking that they saw God up there.
Yeah.
And what happened when you put the fire fruit on the altar, man? What did you do?
I don't know.
Throw the fire fruit away.
Yeah. The gods don't want your fire fruit, Derek.
The village leader's interpretation of things is that they need to make another altar just for fire fruit, just for this thing in the sky. No one gets to eat fire fruit anymore.
Fire fruit is not on the menu, boys.
Yeah. No one seems to make a big deal. Like, if this were to happen now, and all of a sudden someone said, no more plums, actually all stone fruit. Those are for the altar. That would be awful.
Yeah.
I would hate that. But no one makes a big deal out of the fire fruit thing, right?
Maybe they're all like, hey, man, like, I kind of thought fire fruit was giving me some gastrointestinal stuff anyways. So, like, no harm, no foul, really.
Yeah. People are willing to part with a fire fruit. Especially if it means appeasing whatever this is up in the sky.
I was immediately thinking about all the other villages that presumably also exist on this planet and what coincidental thing did they do that seemed to trigger the yeah. arriver of the bringer of the shakes and the bringer of the light.
Derek stopped jacking it after this night. What did you do? I was just jacking it.
You know, at the end of Fifth Element, when the guy like is like, we're all gonna fucking die, and then the stone opens,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Yeah.
Like they all must have interpreted it as something like this.
Yeah.
Anyways, I guess these are like the only guys on the planet that are thinking in this way.
In my village, Derek fucked the fire fruit at the time this thing appeared, and now he must constantly fuck the fire fruit. The constant fucker.
So back up on Voyager, it's announced that they are stuck in synchronous orbit over the equator. And everybody's like, attaboy, Tom. And he's like, don't give me back my second pip too fast. I didn't really have a lot to do with that.
Yeah.
That just happened. But they're stuck. Like, they're stuck in the mud. They don't have warp drive. They don't have any way of breaking out of orbit. And they discover that the super fast spin of this planet and the, like, tachyon core situation means that 1 second on Voyager translates to about a day down on the planet.
Pretty wild to think about. Also wild to think about how rare it is that Seven ever leaves the ass lab. That just seems to be where she works
yeah.
and where she stays now.
Yeah. Very, very occasional trip to the lunchroom, but she really doesn't like it in there.
Seven says that the ship has disrupted the poles of the planet and unexpected changes to the polar region have occurred.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Voyager seems to have become the planet's third pole.
That's not good.
I mean, it's a lot like if you, you know, haven't had fire fruit in a long time, then you eat a bunch of fire fruit, it can cause similar disruptions to your polar region.
Yeah.
It's a lot more dietary fiber than you might be used to.
It's true. You can't just live on a diet of Haribo gummies to make that work.
Oh, yeah.
No one can live on Haribo gummies alone.
Not even touring funk bands.
So here's the danger. The closer they get to this thing, the faster the crew will age.
Yeah.
So they better stay at this altitude.
Yeah. They don't want to get any closer Chakotay and BLT are trying to work on getting the warp drive back, and they think that the gravitational situation down on the planet might have something to tell them about how. So they're getting a probe ready, and Chakotay's like, hey, like, while you're thinking about that, let's make some modifications to the probe to study the surface of this planet, because this is like an amazing chance to study, like, a, you know, if there's an intelligent species down there, we could like take photos of their entire history unfolding.
And BLT's like, hey, Chakotay, why the peeping? Over the course of a millennia. And Chakotay weirdly thinks that this will help his career somehow.
I mean, his first love was anthropology. It's why he got into Starfleet.
That's true. It's why he got into space piracy also. I love how BLT just kind of humors him.
Yeah.
This is nice. Yeah. Whatever, Chakotay.
She's like, it's going to take a couple hours. And he's like, wow, we might miss the first civilization. We'll have to catch the second one.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which, yeah, I really like. That's a good bit.
Back on the planet, it's more pan flutes in the score.
Sounds great.
And we've got a real Colonel Sanders type hustling up some stone steps where he's greeted by a protector. And the protector has got a project going on. He wants to send a letter to what he's calling the ground shaker or light bringer that's in the sky above them. And Colonel Sanders thinks this guy is an idiot.
He kind of has like, Aristotle talking to Alexander the Great kind of vibes.
He definitely has that Halloween party store costume of like ancient genius, which is basically like a maroon robe with a rope belt.
Ancient genius because they don't want to like get sued by the Aristotle estate.
Yeah. It's true.
Because he's telling the protector, like, I taught you better than that. And the protector's like, you superstitious old fuck. I'm sending a letter to these people, but I don't know how to read or write. You didn't teach me that part.
The protector's got such a weird position because the Colonel Sanders character is like, you are an idiot for just like making your default reaction to something you don't understand, like worship. And he's like, no, man, I'm not. I'm here. I'm going to send a letter and also worship.
And the letter like winds up sounding pretty legalistic.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
It's a little bit more like suing the government than sending, you know, a prayer in a luminaria.
Per the appearance in the night sky.
It would behoove you to cease and desist from bringing of shakes and bringing of the light.
The bruising of the fire fruits cannot stand.
Our people lack in a sufficient source of non-soluble fiber in their diet, and therefore we would like you to return the fire fruit to our purview.
This is the only time we meet the protector, really, and he is an interesting guy because, like, not only does he want to worship this thing and send it a letter, he also has an interesting hypothesis about, like, the night sky being full of planets and planets with civilizations that may or may not be like theirs. And,
yeah,
I mean, this guy's kind of half idiot, I guess.
It's a really good guess is what it is. Like, based on zero information, he has decided that every point of light in the sky is probably a city with someone much like him in charge of it.
Prove me wrong.
Hey, you don't get to ascend to the top of the mountain and become protector without getting a little lucky with your predictions.
Yeah. That's true.
Our course is locked in.
Do it. Listen to me very carefully because I'm only going to say this once.
Do it.
How the fuck does this balloon work, though? Because they're like, it looks like it's like a hot air balloon when it's on the ground. But then when they let it go, the fire part is not attached and doesn't go with it.
It's great. Like, how many hot air balloons do you know of that are made of leather?
With like fur still on it?
This thing is like an old timey canteen.
And then like it falls down like 300 miles away, and some rural farmers find the note and are like, bringer of shakes and light. What the fuck is this?
It lands on Jake's jackin' cabin, where he's just given a constant supply of fire fruit to fuck. They've answered! They've answered my jack-offs!
Finally!
Finally, I can stop and lay my weapon down.
We cut to orbit, where the probe has now been deployed, and it's giving back information about the industrial development of this planet. And they're noticing that there's tons of iron in the construction that these people use. And it's because this planet has been racked by earthquakes since Voyager has been in orbit. So they figured out like really high resilience seismic construction techniques much earlier in their development as a intelligent species than is normal, apparently.
We get a fun reminder of how time works in this area, because the probe starts to fail when it's sending back all of this information, and that's because it's aging so quickly. Probes weren't meant to probe for 200 years, right?
Right. Yeah, unless you get it made out of like a really inert material like glass, you do want to replace your probes from time to time.
That's true. Yeah. If you don't accidentally leave them in a rental property. So they make it self-destruct, and I thought for a moment this wasn't going to work. I thought it was going to fall to the surface, and then it's going to give them something else to worship. That doesn't end up happening.
Instead, we cut down and like astronomers in a sort of, you know, old-timey, looking out of giant telescopes context, are trying to send a signal to Voyager and its prime numbers and the elemental constants, and they're sending these signals and not getting anything back.
Like the assistant to the lead scientist is like, I don't know, man, like maybe we should send something more interesting, like a gold record with pictures of our birdies etched into it. Like maybe that would help.
Maybe we should use the first contact technique used for time immemorial of sending nudes.
Like the crude depiction of like Jake fucking a fire fruit.
See, we're cool.
Like that instead of the crucifix has been hung in all of the religious buildings for hundreds of years on this
we're
planet.
Into the same thing as you are.
Yeah.
They're talking a little bit about like the place that the skyship, which is what they now call it, has played in each of their respective childhoods. And the older scientist grew up in a, like, the skyship is an evil palace where bad guys live, and their protector is bad and our protector is good. The younger guy, you know, grew up with Skyship Friends cartoons on TV, and he had all the toys.
It's pretty great.
Yeah. You know, now that they have smartphones, he likes playing Skyship Friends Go while he walks around town.
Yeah.
So the, you know, the prime numbers and the elemental constants don't work. And they're like, what if we rig up a microphone and try like broadcasting at the ship? And up on Voyager in the ass lab, they realize that they're receiving an amplitude modulation radio signal. AM radio, Adam.
That's right.
The locals are broadcasting right wing talk opinion at the Voyager.
I don't think we have anything in common with the people of this planet. And Chakotay is like, really? I mean, I heard there's a guy who likes to fuck fruit down there.
Maybe we should forward this stuff on to the Midas Array and see if Dwight Schultz can tell us a thing or two about this situation.
Yeah. He knows everything about that.
A rare episode of the McLaughlin Group.
Issue one.
Where they listen to some radio broadcasts from the AM band and talk about what it means.
This guy, once you hear the message, made me think of what a great speaker he was. I thought with how time was moving, we'd eventually realize that this guy would be their president or something. Like, he's a really good representative for his people and what they're after.
Yeah.
And he ends his message with an invitation to visit.
It really made me sad thinking about how hard life must be for these people. Like, they're like, please just stop with the fucking earthquakes. Like, we are so tired of it. Like, after hundreds of years, you know?
Here's what I want to ask you, though. Is by only seeing bangers and not seeing their results, do you think that hurts the strength of their argument? Because, like, all we ever see is shit kind of shaking around. But, like, an exterior shot of a city in ruins, I think, would be way more compelling if the message really is stop the shaking.
Yeah.
Which it seems to be over and over again. It just doesn't hit the way I think the show thinks it does.
Let's put a pin in that, because I have some thoughts about that, but okay. In relation to scenes that we haven't gotten to yet.
Yeah. Floated is the idea of a meeting, and Tuvok is like, nope, prime directive.
They are not a warp-capable civilization.
And also, whoever that guy is, he's been dead for hundreds of years.
That guy's dead anyway.
But Chakotay's like, it's not a prime directive breach because, like, our ship is already part of the culture. Like, yeah. We've been here for hundreds and hundreds of years. Like, the breach done happened already. And Paris is like, yeah, that sounds like first contact to me.
First contact, whether we like it or not, is basically what has happened. And they're talking about, like, these guys could have information that we need to leave orbit. Because what they are after is this, like, gravimetric pattern, which for some reason they can't figure out from the ship.
Right. So maybe talking to one of them will give them the intelligence they need to get the hell out of there.
The idea comes up in this meeting, like, we could send the doctor down because, like, it would, like, the physiology of, like, going to fast motion for one of us wouldn't work. It's like listening to a podcast at 60x. Like, you're not even going to absorb the information, much less the cadence of the jokes.
Very, very few people could absorb a podcast that way. But some do.
For whatever reason. So the doctor is going to go down because he can take it. Because he's not the hero we deserve, but he's the one we need right now.
That's right. Janeway's like, under no circumstances are you to engage the people. You must only take pictures.
Photographs? Just photographs.
She's really bragging about, like, what high-tech equipment they have here on the ship. Doctor seems uniquely unimpressed with this.
Yeah.
I've always believed that the mind is the best weapon.
We cut over to the bridge where Chakotay has become a real student of this civilization. He's got all the state capitals memorized. He can spell the weirdly named state from memory. He can sing songs about it. Kim's really impressed by this. And what they're doing on the bridge is trying to decide where exactly to send the doctor. You don't just want to, like, drop him into an alley like most Star Trek episodes would.
I also like that they, like, don't even know what the people look like yet. So they have to give the doctor the ability to adjust his own physical appearance, like, on the fly.
I like that a lot.
What if they're big purple blobs of protoplasm?
Then you'll be the best-looking blob on the planet.
Janeway tells him he has 2 seconds in Voyager time, and that'll be 2 days of on-the-surface time.
Yeah. He's not supposed to talk to anybody. He's just supposed to see if he can get some information, maybe steal an almanac and get back up to Voyager. And the transporter does not work when they try and throw it in reverse.
What a scene. They really try to get him, and they can't.
I thought that the first thought Chakotay has of, like, look for opera houses, that's where he's going to be for sure. It was very funny.
That was a very straight out of Frasier type moment right there. That was big fun.
Yeah.
Like, where would he be? Where could he be if he's down there for years? Like, you don't get the sense that the doctor is going to become the King Zach of the situation, like from Strange New Worlds. Like, he's definitely going to instead choose artistic popularity over any sort of political power.
Right. Pretty quickly, they do get him back. But at this point, enough seconds have passed that he was down there for 3 years.
Yeah.
He had a girlfriend.
Wow.
He lived in an apartment.
Uh-huh.
His apartment was bombed in a war. So much stuff happened to him.
He seems to be relishing this post-mission update, you know?
I thought it was very interesting that the episode spends no time on the captain going, like, I hope you stayed out of sight and didn't, like, violate my one order, which was not to talk to anyone.
Yeah. Does not work out that way.
No.
3 years is a long time, Captain.
You'll get no argument from me.
I've got to get that
platinum.
Get that
robe enlargement.
I've got to get that
platinum.
What now? Are you planning a heist?
Gold.
Mother's Day is coming up, and one of the best gifts you can give a mom that you might share a bed with is doing some yard work. Some yard work downstairs, if you know what I mean. With Manscaped. This season, make sure you groom your carpets and your drapes with the leaders in below-the-waist grooming. Get 20% off and free shipping with the code SCARVS at manscaped.com. That's 20% off and free shipping with the code SCARVS at manscaped.com. Nothing like a little spring cleaning in your pants to let the mother of your children know how much you appreciate her continuing to put up with you. Are you looking for the perfect gift to celebrate the moms in your life? Aura Frames are beautiful Wi-Fi connected digital picture frames that allow you to share and display unlimited photos. Every mom I have ever given an Aura Frame to has absolutely loved it. And that includes a lot of moms I know. This is a gift that I have personally given many, many times. And it's great. I can upload photos from my phone the moment I take them. And that means that mom or grandma out there is going to get pictures of their loved ones delivered to their living room. And right now, Aura is having a great sale for Mother's Day. Listeners can save on the perfect gift by visiting AuraFrames.com to get $30 off plus free shipping on their best-selling frame. That's AuraFrames.com and use the code SCARVS at checkout to show your support for our show. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey, when you listen to podcasts, it really just comes down to whether or not you like the sound of everyone's voices. My voice is one of the sounds you'll hear on the podcast Dr. Game Show, and this is the voice of co-host and fearless leader Joe Firestone.
This is a podcast where we play games submitted by listeners, and we play them with callers over Zoom we've never spoken to in our lives. So that is basically the concept of the show. Pretty chill.
So take it or leave it, bucko. And here's what some of the listeners have to say.
It's funny, wholesome, and it never fails to make me smile.
I just started listening and I'm already binging it. I haven't laughed this hard in ages. I wish I discovered it sooner.
You can find Dr. Game Show on MaximumFun.org.
Video games can make you laugh.
They can make you cry.
They can even make you sing.
We're the hosts of Triple Click.
It's a podcast about video games.
This is an exciting time for new games, from Diablo to Final Fantasy.
From Starfield to Street Fighter.
From Zelda to, oh, who are we kidding? We're just going to talk about Zelda.
Whether you play games or you just like hearing about them, we've got you covered.
Find us at MaximumFun.org or wherever you get your podcasts. Bye.
I'm giving you an order. I'm giving you an order. Is that understood? I'm giving you an order. Just crossed the line.
What do you understand are the doctor's abilities, W/R/T, like accumulating data, like the way the character Data would? Like, yeah. Could he just absorb that the way Data can?
I feel like he must be able to. Like, I kind of wish they'd written him as being his own tricorder a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah, what does he need all that stuff for?
The business of having the tricorder is good for acting in scenes, I guess. But, like, it'd be kind of cool if he didn't even need it, you know?
Yeah. One interesting thing the doctor says is that Voyager is sort of central in everything the people are doing, whether or not it's with their technology or with their art or whatever. Like, Voyager represents a thing to aspire toward in all ways.
Yeah.
And the society is making improvements to all those areas as a result.
It's sort of like when you're like, you know, worried that people are going to think what you do for a living is embarrassing or whatever. And then your wife says, like, I'm sure nobody is thinking about you that much.
Yeah.
And then you find out actually everyone is thinking about you all the time and how embarrassing your job is.
It's hard to know what cuts deeper. The knowledge that may or may not be true. Or a special life partner telling you that no one cares. Even me.
there's a space race going between all the different states on this planet to see who can get to Voyager first. And he's saying, like, somebody's coming soon. And the captain asks the ominous question, is that going to be an astronaut or a warhead? And
yeah,
it sounds like it sort of depends on which state wins the race.
Will it be a warhead or a person head?
If it's a Leica, I don't think I can take that. That's too sad.
For some reason, Naomi Wildman gets a scene in this episode.
She's working on her own report about this planet. She workshops the name of that report with Seven a little bit.
I like how Seven is like the Justin Timberlake of The Social Network in this scene. Like, really cleaning up that title.
Yeah, yeah. Makes it a lot cooler.
Drop the. Just Facebook.
Perfect.
Good job, Seven.
You know, by the time I deleted Facebook and stopped going there, I was like going through the like quick bookmarks in my browser, and I realized that it had been thefacebook.com in my bookmark list.
You had it way back then.
It had been there for that long. Yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah. Wild. So this is when they try and leave orbit. They've got up enough power to make a go of it or whatever. And they try, and this causes an earthquake on the surface that I thought the stakes could have been a lot higher for. Like, this is sort of like what you were talking about earlier, where we don't see a ruined city. And when they talk about it, they're like, oh yeah, it was just like a coastal area. It's no big deal. Make it a big deal. Make these people have a understandable gripe and not just a, like, we don't like it when the ground shakes a little bit, but we built all our buildings super strong, so it doesn't matter that much.
If all of the bangers matter, kind of none of the bangers matter, you know?
Yeah.
Like, make them distinct.
And this one should be, like, devastating.
Yeah. So they stop trying to leave. That's the main takeaway.
Right.
And we cut to some characters who have left the surface in a rocket. We've got some person heads on board this thing.
Yeah.
And it's Daniel Day Kim as one of them.
Amazing. Very young, very fresh-faced Daniel Day Kim.
One of the greats.
Kind of pre-super famous, right? Like, I don't think he'd done a lot at this point in his career.
Yeah.
Very fun to see him in this episode. He is the pilot, and he and his commander don't seem to know about the temporal shift, so like they lose contact with their people, and you can tell that it's just the radio broadcast or super sped up.
Yeah.
And she's, you know, that type of commander that's like, whatever, we're out of contact, but we're going to do the mission anyways. And
I kind of love that about her.
Yeah.
I guess we'll have to go inside.
And they pull up to Voyager and connect and are like crawling through Jeffrey's tubes before we realize what's going on in a fun way.
If you were to just like hit pause on the ship and all of its occupants, it doesn't seem like another alien race could just fly their shuttle up to the ship and somehow gain entry.
Right.
Right? Good for them.
Yeah. Did they cut a hole?
Yeah. Yeah, you really do skip a scene and get inside Voyager as these two are climbing down ladders.
Yeah.
I got to say, the crotch zippers of their spacesuits really draw the eye.
There's some cod inside those pieces, let me tell you.
Kind of looks useful for their obvious purpose.
Yeah, for fucking the sky people.
Yeah. Yeah. That's why both of them just have a hand on the zipper ready to go.
Right, yeah. They're trained in fast draw.
Yeah.
So the Voyager crew kind of appear frozen to them, but warm to the touch.
Yeah.
So they're like, are they in some kind of stasis or like, what's going on?
Would it be right to fuck them? No, I guess.
Yeah. Like they can't really say yes or no in this state.
That would be bad.
So they make it onto the bridge before the temporal shift really affects them.
You can't tell me that the people involved with this scene aren't fans of Police Squad, because the Janeway and Neelix coffee pouring freeze frame is just so perfect.
It really is. The coffee is flowing all over the floor.
Uh-huh.
Daniel Day-Kim is like, it's amazing. It's like they don't even know we're here. But then they like, you know, they both feel bad and fall over. And then we're in real time with the Voyager crew noticing that they have a couple of interlopers. And this time transition kills the mission commander. And it's just Daniel Day-Kim that wakes up in Six Bay.
Yeah. We tried to shoot her into space in a torpedo casing and it went really fast. Faster than any torpedo we've ever shot.
He accepts the, like, your crew is dead, everyone you've ever met is dead thing really well.
I love that his first reaction is about that. Like, in multiple scenes, that seems to be his starting point. That feels right.
Yeah, but they're very conscious of the fact that they need to get him back as quickly as possible because every second he spends up here, his culture is going through the grief of having lost their space mission and then, you know, moving on and becoming angry and vengeful. So they're like, hey, but, you know, we could really use your help with this, like, gravity data that the EMH brought back because that stuff will help us potentially get out of here.
What do you make of, like, the macro versus micro problem that Daniel Day-Kim is grappling with here? Because by only painting the consequence of his actions as a, like, everyone on your planet is aging super quickly and dying at a rate that is almost impossible to comprehend versus, I got a wife and a dog down there. Like, he never makes it so personal to him.
Yeah.
And I think that was another missed opportunity here. Like, I wanted to feel for his situation more. But even he seems to have, like, a super big picture relationship with what's going on with him.
He's an astronaut in a space capsule. Give him a photo of his family to stick in the controls, you know?
I mean, that would kill him almost instantly, given what we know about the powers of those photographs.
Yeah.
I know you don't want to do it.
Do it. Coffee black. Make it yourself.
I'm trying to help you see this as an opportunity to grow.
Make it yourself.
I was very distracted after they established, like, okay, we, like, your culture will be more alien to you than us if we don't get you back really quickly. And then he's, like, wandering around the halls in no particular hurry, talking sports with the EMH.
Yeah.
Mountain or lakeside?
Mountain, of course. Don't tell me you're a lakeside supporter.
That seemed too idle of a conversation to have at a moment where we're trying to establish that the clock is super ticking on him.
This seems to be a quality of some Star Trek episodes, too, where it's like the central problem can be very, very serious and treated seriously, or it can be very, very serious with also a little bit of a beat in there for humor or whatever. And that's definitely what the scene between the doctor and him is for.
He's like a little bit melancholic about the idea of the skyship leaving because he feels like it's been a source of great inspiration for his people. And he's like, maybe we, like, won't feel motivated to do anything after you go.
Yeah.
Which is a real, like, you can't break up with me because I'll do self-harm kind of controlling donut planet move.
There's a scene where Daniel Day-Kim and Janeway talk about the prospect of him leaving. And as if this episode is a musical, Daniel Day-Kim breaks into song rather than answering a question.
Star of the night, star of the day, come to take my tears away.
In other hands, this would be an awful moment in this episode. But, like, there's a sincerity to this performance that actually makes it work. This shouldn't work.
Shouldn't work. But it does.
Yeah.
He's got a great singing voice. I don't think I've ever heard him singing before. The melody was very, like, it doesn't end on a note that is comforting to our, like, Western music sensibilities.
Yeah.
Which I thought was interesting.
I'm not comfortable criticizing anyone else's ability to sing, though, either.
I was saying he was a good singer.
No, I mean, even...
I'm not allowed to say that?
Saying anything at all about anyone else's singing. I just don't know if we have license to do that.
Okay. Michael Jordan was a basketball player. I will not say anything about the quality of his play.
Yeah, that's fair.
Daniel Dae Kim is an actor who sings occasionally.
All right, I get your point.
I won't ask you if you like this episode.
All right.
So in the Ass Lab, he's working with Seven when they start detecting the sure signs that warp experimentation is being done on the surface of the planet. And the warp experimentation seems pretty disastrous. It's like implosions.
Yeah.
It seems bad.
Yeah.
But yeah, they're trying to figure this stuff out. And this is going to take all of these prime directive concerns right off the table.
Yeah, as soon as you're warp capable, that means you're open for communications.
Yeah, but it also means that they're capable of going toe-to-toe with the Voyager, and pretty quickly, bangers start getting dropped on the ship. The bangers are coming in so fast that they can't even detect what's causing them, but it's torpedoes.
I like how grounded this moment is in the reality of technology in Star Trek, right? Like, we've seen it over and over again that with warp technology comes greater weapons technology. And that's often like a fork in the invention road to societies.
Daniel Dae Kim sort of feels like this is, you know, a moment for him to try and do some diplomacy. So he's like apologizing for what his people are trying to do. And Janeway's like, you know, we're in their orbit. They have every right.
Yeah.
The only thing we can do is send you back and have you beg them to stop shooting at us.
What an interesting idea. Like, you don't get the sense that Daniel Dae Kim wants to stay, but he's got to be a little disappointed to be leaving, right?
Yeah. Like, I wish I could hang out for a little bit longer. I mean, everybody I know is dead anyways.
Yeah. Yeah. And the problem with what's happening on the surface is that, like, the weapons technology is getting better every time they shoot something. So they kind of have to hurry to get Daniel Dae Kim down there again to plead their case.
So they get him back in his spacesuit and the EMH is walking him to his ship. And it's like, man, like, they're gonna listen to you just based on the way your crotch looks in this suit. Like, who could turn down a man hanging this much nuck?
Yeah, that is long zipper energy happening down there.
How does the EMH have a kid down on that planet? What technology did he invent?
It's a long story.
I just had to sit there and really consider this.
I mean, adoption is like the Occam's razor answer, but I like to think that the EMH like somehow sired a half hologram kiddo.
Yeah. Life finds a way.
In the capsule, as it descends, Daniel Dae Kim is like calling the customer service hotline of his planet and, you know, getting a lot of guff from whoever picks up the phone, and like they won't, you know, put him on with their manager.
Yeah.
Launch control became the tactical command center 50 years ago. You're dead.
It's really tough. I would have just given up at this point. My wife would have powered through. And like, the stakes are getting raised because now the surface is shooting tri-cobalt devices at the Voyager.
Yeah, it seems as though at some point their weapons technology surpasses Voyager's defense technology.
Yeah.
Their communications technology remains the same, though.
Yeah, yeah. Because, like, Daniel Dae Kim has been gone for not that long Voyager time, but a year and a half planet time. And mm-hmm. This is enough for the planet to launch a couple of ships that come up into orbit and like tractor onto Voyager from both sides and pull it into a higher orbit, and warp drive is back. The day is saved. They're going to be able to leave. And then Daniel Dae Kim appears on the bridge, and it's like not clear if he beams over, if it's like a hologram of him that's like being represented from one of the ships or something.
Yeah.
But he's like, hey, sorry to took me a little bit longer than expected. It's been really, really amazing getting to know you guys. Feel like I'm saying goodbye to old friends. They're like, we don't feel like that. We just met you.
There's coffee in first contact the proper way.
Unfortunately, that won't be possible.
He does that thing where he says, like, it feels like I'm saying goodbye to old friends. And then he just blurps away. Like, he does not say goodbye to old friends. He just says it feels that way.
He sucks at goodbyes, you know? Forgive him.
I don't like this scene because, once again, you don't know anything about his inner life. Like, say something about, like, yeah, I'm a hero down there. I'm a very popular leader and president, given my experience. And, yeah, like, I ushered my entire planet through whatever it was that just happened. And I'm a hero. Good for me. Like, there's nothing about him.
I've spent most of the past year touring the planet, like, helping people prepare themselves for the emotional shock of the, like, one constant in our society going away. Like, yeah, the skyship is leaving and that will change everything for our people.
What I've done is placed a lot of high dollar value bets in just about every gambling establishment I could find on the light in the sky disappearing. So I'm about to be a very, very rich man.
The seismic retrofitting industry, I've placed a lot of shorts on companies that work in that space.
It turns out Daniel Day Kim's character is a total monster. Wouldn't that be a great Star Trek episode, though? Like, as it is, this is how the episode ends. Like, an old Daniel Day Kim sits on a rock looking at the city below, and then he watches the Voyager disappear. But, like, I would argue that's a nice Star Trek ending, but not an interesting science fiction ending.
Right.
And I feel like this episode of Star Trek Voyager is straining against that aspect, right? Like, are you a interesting science fiction pulp novel, or are you a Star Trek episode? And it feels like this is one that just sort of dips its toe into the pulpy aspects of it, but stays super duper clean,
yeah,
on the story as it goes.
Well, how does that work for you, Adam? Did you like this episode?
You know, I'm really easy to get along with most of the time. But I don't like bullying, I don't like Brett, and I don't like you.
I wish it was more pulpy.
Yeah. I think it could be still super Star Trek-y in that way. Like, if the guy that was their savior that helped them get out of the space anomaly was somebody that they had morally ambivalent feelings about, like, that doesn't make it non-Star Trek-y. If he took the access that he had had to the skyship and went back to his people, and they knew that he was, like, a totally avaricious character that used it for ill-gotten gains in his society, that would be, like, an amazing Star Trek end. That they,
yeah,
this is, like, a classic example of why you don't violate the Prime Directive. This was a total fuck-up by us, and we feel shitty about it.
To avoid maybe the most obvious consequence of time travel being, like, greed and avarice, it just felt like the missing notes in a story.
Yeah.
Does that make this more interesting or less, though? I don't know. Like, I think there are myriad episodes of Star Trek where I've been, like, effusive in my praise of an episode, like, going in a new and interesting place. And just as many where I'm like, you know, that is a story we've experienced before, done really, really well. And in this case, I think it might just be down to the Daniel Day Kim effect. Like, you see him on screen and you expect something more developed than what you get. And I think maybe, yeah, that's what I'm straining against, is like, look at him. You got a Daniel Day Kim here. Like, that's all you're going to do with him? I think that's where I'm at. I think if it's, yeah, any other actor, like a guest actor of the week that we don't know, maybe I don't feel that same way. Maybe I'm like, great episode, interesting guy, wonder whatever happened to him. But I see Daniel Day Kim and I'm like, something amazing happened to him and they're not telling us.
Yeah, yeah. I think that, you know, between the sort of pulled punch on his character seeming to be pretty underdeveloped and pretty, I mean, I get it. Like, they only have a moment with the characters in each timeline that they show us on this planet.
Mm-hmm. And he got the most by far.
Yeah. But between that and the, like, never seeming to really give us stakes for the planet, you know, like, I wanted to see skyscrapers falling over. Mm-hmm. I wanted to feel like the earthquakes that Voyager was causing had real negative impacts, and that, like, Even when the doctor describes the war that breaks out, that destroys his apartment, it sounds like a meaningless border skirmish that like didn't have any geopolitical antecedents and it didn't have any geopolitical fallout.
When apartments are destroyed, that is definitionally like civilian casualties.
Yeah.
That had to be a major situation.
Right. And he's like, yeah, some guy decided to like shoot us up. And so we like shot him back and then it was over. It's like, wait a minute. Like, how about that is caused by a huge earthquake and like, you know, and people have really strong feelings about the skyship doing this to them. I just think that the script needed like one more draft or something.
Turns out I came so close to death that I started coming real ropes. Now it's the only thing that can make me feel anything anymore.
The only thing that can make me feel anything anymore, Adam, is priority one messages.
Let's see how close to death we get as we read the next messages, Ben.
Priority one message from Starfleet coming in on secured channel.
Need a supplemental income.
Supplemental income?
Supplemental.
Supplemental.
Yeah, it's extra.
By the interest alone could be enough to buy this ship.
Our first one here is from Kevin McCoy. It is to Uxbridge Shimoda Quality Assurance Team.
Oh, no. Oh, no.
I feel like we've been getting a lot of these lately.
Yeah.
Goes like this. I'm currently halfway through Voyager Season 4 and saw the last few seasons have had a noticeable boost in the quality and smoothness of editing, with drops feeling like they're part of the flow. It was great before and even better now, thanks to everyone involved. Could whoever edits this please play the drop they think is the most underappreciated? Wow!
Well, how do you expect me to type?
And with your fingers.
With my nose?
Would have definite advantages.
Okay, it's typing everything I'm saying.
And with your fingers.
And my nose!
They're destroying.
Did you see that? With my nose?
There it sits.
Stop it!
Everything you have done.
Stop.
With your fingers.
Stop.
With your fingers.
Stop.
How do you expect me to type with my nose?
Stop.
Stop it.
Stop.
Stop it.
Stop.
Stop it.
Stop.
Stop it.
Stop it. You thought you could handle it. So handle it.
That does it. I quit.
Well, if you rearrange the letters Kevin McCoy, you'll find that you can make the name Windy Pretty.
You think this is a pseudonym?
I, too, think the show's quality has been great, Kevin. You know who's to blame here.
There's a picture of Kevin McCoy here next to the note, and it's this person has very thick-rimmed glasses and a big nose and mustache and eyebrows.
Uh-huh.
But then, like, kind of the same haircut as Windy.
Hmm. Hmm.
Huh.
All right. Look, Kevin, you can, like, just attempt to get into her DMs or something. Don't play this game with the P1s.
I like the money. I'd say go ahead and play the game.
Ben, our second priority one message comes from Jeff from Cullowhee, North Carolina. Messages to Ben and Adam, and it goes like this. I had a whole thing about how great this pod is, but I get fewer characters than I thought, so right to the bit. Yeah, I was wondering why we don't see any Gorns in the TNG era, a species of hideous intelligence who know only aggression and destruction. Where did they go? Could it be that a particular immortal race knew them as the Hus?
Get a life!
And yeah, the message gets cut off from there.
Wow, that's good headcanon. Kevin Uxbridge solved the problem for everyone?
Jeff's idea is that Kevin Uxbridge killed the Gorns?
Wow.
And maybe to Kevin, the Gorns were the Hoosnock. Amazing.
Yeah, actually, if you rearrange the letters in Hoosnock, it does spell Gorn.
It does. Wow.
And when we've seen depictions of the Hoosnock, it looks like a kind of a Godzilla head man.
Yeah.
But with like a big nose and like big rimmed glasses and a mustache and bushy eyebrows.
I never really described the Hooshnack, did I? I didn't want it to make it about what they look like. I thought that would make me look pretty bad. Worse than genocide.
I didn't want to add insult to injury. You know, I could go on and on about them. Not terribly talented singers either, but far from the worst thing about them.
I mean, how much do I have to disparage them when every single one of them is dead?
Wow. Well, we've had some great Priority One fun today. And
yeah.
If you'd like to get in on the fun, head to MaximumFun.org/Jumbotron and set a message up today.
Hey, Ben.
What's that, Adam?
Did you find yourself a drunk Shimoda?
Incredible.
Drunk Shimoda.
Oh, boy. I'm going to give my drunk Shimoda to Chakotay. The revelation that the probe is going to take several more hours to configure so that he can do his little study, that's another bet that works out well in the long run. Like, great guess by him.
Yeah.
But based on nothing, and the problem is fucking urgent. Like, they got to get out of here. Deploy that probe.
There is a real lack of urgency most of the time this episode.
Yeah.
It's only when they're at the receiving end of a weapon that they really decide to affect some action, right?
Bangers are the ultimate raise in stakes, I guess.
Yeah, bangers are the ultimate equalizer in this case.
How about you? Did you have a drunk Shimoda?
Yeah, I might just make it Janeway for a similar reason. Like, we've seen how flexible the Prime Directive can be in moments of crisis or emergency. I think you got to go to the planet. I mean, send the doctor back, is what I'm saying. Like, how disappointed should she be in the doctor for not really doing much to actually study the planet and how it works in an effort to get them out of there? Like, he's got weather reports and a couple of geological surveys. That's not going to help.
No.
Instead, he was down there fucking.
Yeah.
Fucking around. The doctor should be in big trouble. That's what I'm trying to say. That's why I'm switching my Shimoda to the doctor.
He fucked around and found out.
Yeah. He found out very little. Not enough to help them. So yeah, I switched up my Shimoda during.
Wow.
And I landed on the doctor.
I really respect that.
Yeah. I found my way to the right Shimoda eventually.
All right, you talked me into it. He's my Shimoda too.
All right.
Boy, Adam, it's time for us to think about what we will be doing next week. That's the portion of the show that we've arrived at.
Yeah.
I'm going to head over to gach.biz/game, but let me first tell you about season 6, episode 13, Virtuoso. The doctor's passion for music spills over into his personal life. Seems like they maybe scanned the opera houses an episode too early.
Yeah, it turns out this is just a retelling of what happened on this planet with the doctor.
I have telemetry from our runabout on square 67, where right ahead of us is that Naomi Wildman square, in which each host must make a piece of artwork that represents the episode and share it with the other and post pictures. That could happen to us.
Ben, you may remember at the end of the last episode, I rolled a 2 and we went forward like a bunch of spaces that weren't 2. I think any square on the board is a possibility at this point with what's going on here programmatically.
We're in uncharted waters. Assuming the dice do work, though, we could also hit that Janeway square, which would take us up to a Neelix's Galley.
Oh,
which
yeah.
Which is, of course, a bubble wine episode.
You're required to learn as you play. Roll.
I'm rolling. And I rolled a 4, and we've actually gone forward 4 spaces.
Chula! Did I win?
Hardly.
Huh.
Skipped over Naomi Wildman. We are right on the doorstep of that Janeway Square on square 71.
And it's a regular old episode. That's great.
That is great. I'm really looking forward to it. And I'm looking forward to going online and seeing friends at DeSoto talking about this episode. It's always really fun on show release day. Like, we're not really the people that load it up and press the go button anymore. So my experiences of Mondays and Fridays now is usually like some point in the middle of the morning going, oh, a new episode came out today. I should like see what's going on. And like,
you don't subscribe to our own show anymore?
I mean, it's in my podcatcher, but uh-huh. You know, I want the download stats, but I don't sure. like, listen to it in there.
Yeah, that's true.
But it's always fun to like remember that I could go online and see people joking around and talking about it. We really appreciate the folks who listen and especially the folks who support at MaximumFun.org/join.
I also really appreciate the friends of DeSoto who take the time to review the show. I recently saw a review that did not like our show because all we ever did was drink and hate the show we were watching.
Wow.
I don't know what podcast this person was listening to, but if you disagree with that assessment...
Bury them! Drag them, kings and queens!
A few more 5-star reviews might go a long way toward negating whatever it was that axe was to be ground in our direction.
Yeah.
Weird.
It's not for some people. Maybe this person ignored a warning bois and shouldn't have listened.
The warning bois are all around us.
We gotta thank Wendy Pretty, the producer of this program. I love getting a thank you to Wendy Pretty in the P1s. That's nice.
Absolutely. Yeah. She is deserving of all the thanks.
Got to thank Bill Tilly, the card daddy, our social media coordinator. We got to thank Adam Ragusea, who made the original theme music of the show, and Dark Materia, who made the original Picard song upon which it is based. Go find Adam Ragusea online, you goof. Better than this.
Quit goofing around.
Yeah. Be serious. Come on.
You think you're a serious person? Listen to the Adam Ragusea podcast.
With that, we will be back at you next time. Another great episode of Star Trek Voyager and an episode of The Greatest Generation Voyager that's breaking into song.
Oh, no. Is the next episode a musical episode?
I don't know. If it's the one I'm remembering, it kind of is. But I'm not sure.
Oh, no. I'm going to need a drink for that one. I am become bad Greatest Gen review. Destroyer of stars.
Yeah, they really the secreted that, didn't they?
Uh-huh.
Maximum Fun.
A worker-owned network.
Of artists-owned shows.
Supported.
Directly.
By you.